This is Audible.
Brought to you by Puffin.
Penguin presents Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Meltdown, by Jeff Kinney, read by Dan Russell. Hello. Just a heads up before the main event. The production you're about to experience is a 3D audio production. What does this mean? Well, firstly, in order to fully appreciate the 3D immersion, you need to be listening on headphones. Because sometimes it might sound like this. Or like this. Yahoo! And sometimes things like this might happen. So, hold on to your hats, sit back, and enjoy the ride. January, Monday. Everybody in my neighborhood is outside today enjoying the warm weather and sunshine. Well, everyone except me. It's kind of hard to enjoy a heat wave when it's the middle of the winter. People are calling this wacky weather, but it just doesn't feel right. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I think it should be cold in the winter and hot in the summer. I've heard the whole planet is warming up and that human beings are the reason, but don't blame me because I just got here. If the world is getting hotter, I just hope it doesn't happen too fast, because if things keep up at this rate, I'll be riding a camel to high school. They say the ice caps are melting and the sea is rising, so I've been trying to convince Mom and Dad to buy a house higher up on our hill. But they just don't seem all that concerned. It kind of makes me nervous that I'm the only one in my family worried about this stuff. Because if we don't do something about the situation soon, we're gonna wish we did. The whole family will be living under the sea. It's not just the rising sea levels I'm nervous about. Those ice caps have been around for millions of years, and there could be things buried inside them that should stay that way. Imagine if an ice cap cracked and out came a big three-eyed dinosaur. I saw a movie about a caveman who got frozen in ice, and when it melted thousands of years later, he was still alive. I don't know if that kind of thing could actually happen in real life, but if there are unfrozen cavemen walking around these days, the night janitor at my school might be one of them. If we do figure a way out of this climate mess, it's probably going to be someone from my generation who solves it. That's why I'm always nice to the smart kids, because they're the ones who are going to save our butts. Whatever the answer is, I guarantee you, technology is going to be the key. Grown-ups are always saying that too much technology is bad for kids, but I say the more the better. In fact, as soon as I can afford one of those high-tech toilets that learns all your habits, I'm going to get the most expensive model. Like the kind that warms its seat for you and says,
"Hello, Gregory. I've been waiting for you."
Some people worry that one day we'll lose control of our technology and robots will take over. Well, if that happens, I'm going to make sure I'm on their side. I've actually been preparing for when the robots take over by sucking up to the appliances in my house. The other day, I walked up to the microwave and said, You're looking good today. Did you just get cleaned? So, when there's a giant robot versus human war in the future, I'll be patting myself on the back for thinking ahead. My brother Roderick says that in the future, people will have robot body parts and will all be cyborgs. Well, I hope I don't have to wait too long for that, because if I could buy myself a pair of robot legs, they could walk me to school each morning while the rest of me gets an extra half hour sleep. I guess we don't really know what's going to happen in the future, and you could drive yourself crazy worrying about it. Even if we solve all the problems we have right now, some new thing will come along, and then we'll have to deal with that. I've read that's what happened with the dinosaurs. They were riding high for a couple of 100 million years, and then an asteroid came and wiped them out. What's really crazy is that cockroaches were around back then, and somehow they survived. And they'll probably be here long after we're gone, too. Personally, I think cockroaches are disgusting, but they must be doing something right. Speaking of survival, right now, I'm just trying to get through middle school. And the last few days haven't been all that great. Even though it's warm outside, the thermostat at school still thinks it's winter. So the furnace is on full blast all day, which makes it hard to concentrate in class. And it's worse in the cafeteria, because there aren't any windows you can open to get fresh air. Fan. The heat has been frying my brain, and I've been forgetting when my homework is due. I forgot a really big one today, which was my country project for the International Showcase. Back in November, everyone had to choose a country to do a report on. I picked Italy because I'm a huge pizza fan. But it turns out Italy was a really popular choice, so my social studies teacher had to draw names to decide who got it. And she chose Dennis Tracton, which isn't fair, because he's lactose intolerant and can't even eat cheese. So the teacher assigned me Malta, which I didn't even know was a country. Anyway, that was 2 months ago, and I didn't give my country project a second thought until today. And the only reason I remembered was because when I got to school, everybody was wearing weird clothes. I probably should have realized it was International Showcase Day when my friend Rowley came to get me for school wearing a crazy getup. He was wearing this giant bearskin hat like some British guy. Whew. But he's always doing strange stuff, so I barely even noticed. In homeroom, I took a look at Rowley's project to see how much work was involved, and that's when I started to panic. His report looked like it took a ton of time, and it was pretty obvious his parents helped him with it. Of course, Rowley had actually been to the country he got assigned, so I'm sure that made it a lot easier for him. He used a trifold board, and he called it Jolly Old England, and there were things about location and climate, history, money and transportation, and Big Ben and the Tower of London and stuff. I asked Rowley to be a pal and switch countries with me, but he's kind of selfish, so he wouldn't go for it. That meant I was on my own, and I only had a few hours to do my whole project from scratch, and I didn't know where I was going to find a trifold board this late in the game. That's when I remembered I had a trifold in my locker. I had started my country project the day after it was assigned, so I could get ahead with things for once. But when I pulled it out to see how far I'd got, I was pretty disappointed. All it said was Mysterious Mull. This project was 50% of my social studies grade, so I was desperate. I tried getting help from my classmates, but all that did was remind me I need to get some smarter friends. Any of you guys know where Malta is?
In your butt.
I stayed indoors for recess to work on my project. I didn't have time to go down to the library for research, so I had to do a lot of guessing. The only thing I felt pretty sure about was that Malta was near Russia, but I was pretty shaky on everything else. So I wrote things like, Mysterious Malta Facts. Location, somewhere in Russia. Transportation, feet, horse, car. Climate, sometimes sunny, sometimes not. Currency, sweet corn, bottle caps, paper clips. Malta Facts. Malta has the same number of letters as fudge. Another fact, no United States presidents were born in Malta. Once I finished filling out my trifold, I started working on the other stuff. We were supposed to wear our country's traditional dress for the international showcase, so on the way to lunch, I picked out some clothes from the lost and found in front of the principal's office. Luckily, there were a few decent items in the box, and I put together an outfit that looked pretty convincing. I had snowshoes on and a hoodie with a fringe around it. Cool, huh? Everyone was supposed to bring a traditional meal, too. At lunch, I bought as many items as I could afford and threw something together that looked like it might have been from another country. It was a hot dog and asparagus wrapped in meatloaf. Mmm. The international showcase was during the last period, and when I set up my project in the gym, I was actually feeling pretty good about things. But I wish I'd got assigned a country where they wore lighter clothes because the furnace was still on full blast. The heat was getting to some other kids, too, and tempers were starting to flare. At one point, Brazil and Bulgaria got in a fight over table space, and a teacher had to come and break it up. Kids came in from the elementary school to check out our projects and ask questions. But all I had to do to get them to move along was pretend I only spoke Maltese.
How many people live in your country?
Okay.
After that, the parents started to arrive. Luckily, mine couldn't come because Dad was at work and Mom was at her college. But some kid in my grade has a mom and dad who are actually from Malta, which was really bad luck for me. I thought they were going to report me to my teacher, and I was ready to make a run for it. But then something happened that let me off the hook. The fight that started between Brazil and Bulgaria flared back up and spilled over to the C and D countries. And before long, the whole gym was at war. Luckily, the bell rang and school got dismissed before anyone was seriously hurt. But the whole situation doesn't exactly give me a lot of hope for world peace. Tuesday. Well, I thought I was in the clear, but I was wrong. My social studies teacher sent a note home to my parents that said I had to do my international showcase project again. So, Mom said I can't watch TV or play video games until I finish. I figure I can probably get this thing done by Saturday, but it won't matter anyway. That's because Mom is making me and my brothers have screen-free weekends. Mom thinks us kids are addicted to screens, and they're the reasons we misbehave. So, she started this new policy where we're not allowed to use any electronics on Saturdays and Sundays, and we have to find other ways to entertain ourselves. What really stinks is that when Mom catches us behaving at the weekends, she thinks it's proof that screen-free weekends are working. So lately, me and Roderick have been remembering to misbehave on Saturdays and Sundays so Mom doesn't think her no-screens policy is working. Mom says kids these days don't know how to interact with one another because we're always staring at our screens. So, she's been working with me and Roderick on our social skills. One thing Mom's always trying to get me to do is look her in the eye when I'm talking to her. I can do that for a little while, but after a few seconds, it just gets too weird. So she'll say, "So, tell me about your day."
"It was good."
The latest thing Mom's been making me do is practice shaking hands with Dad. But that is awkward for both of us. Mom wants me to branch out and make more friends in the neighborhood. But I'm already friends with Rowley, and he's all I can really handle right now. Especially during International Showcase Day. He'll sit there and say things like,
"Fancy a spot of tea?"
Even though there are a ton of kids on my street, I really can't see being friends with any of them. I already feel like I'm making an exception for Rowley, and the options go downhill from there. Our house is halfway up Surrey Street, and Rowley's house is near the top. Sometimes it's a pain to even go and see him, because I have to pass by Fregley's house to do it. And 9 times out of 10, Fregley is hanging out in his front yard. He'll stand there and say,
"Bet you I can find your tickle spot."
Across the street from Fregley is Jacob Hoff, but he almost never comes outside because his parents are always making him practice the clarinet. And on either side of Jacob are Ernesto Gutierrez and Gabriel Johns, who are in my grade. Ernesto and Gabriel are nice kids and all, but they both have bad breath, so those two are perfect for each other. 2 doors down from me is David Marsh, who's really into karate. He's best friends with Joseph O'Rourke, who's always doing something to get himself injured. Next door to Joseph is Mitchell Pickett, who makes a killing selling pre-made snowballs in the winter. And mark my words, one day, that kid's gonna be a millionaire.
Thank you very much.
Mitchell lives next to a boy 1 year younger than me who everybody calls Speed Bump.
Huh?
But people steer clear of him because his 2 older brothers are already in jail. There's a kid named Purvis Gentry, who has a treehouse in his backyard, and he spends his summers solving neighborhood crimes. But most of the time, the person responsible is Speed Bump.
Huh?
There's a duplex building 3/4 of the way down the hill, and the 2 families who live in it hate each other. Their water wars are epic. I can never get the kids in that house straight, but I know one of them is named Gino because he has a tattoo on his arm, even though he's only something like 7 years old. There's a boy who lives with his grandmother a few doors down, and his name is Gibson. Everyone calls him Baby Gibson because no matter how much time goes by, he never seems to get any older. For all I know, Baby Gibson is 32 years old, and he's got kids of his own. There's a playgroup of preschoolers that gets together twice a week at Mrs. Jimenez's house. I don't know which kids are hers and which ones are her friends. What I do know is that those kids are totally out of control, and the moms don't really seem to care. There are some older kids on our street, too. Anthony Dennard is a sophomore in high school, and he just started shaving. But he got carried away with the razor blade and accidentally shaved off one of his eyebrows. Anthony drew it back on with a brown marker, but he didn't do a good job, and now one half of his face always looks surprised. Anthony's best friend is Sheldon Reyes, who tried to make money plowing the neighbors' driveways the first time it snowed this winter. But Sheldon doesn't have his license yet, and he did a lot of damage in our neighborhood before his dad found out his son was using his truck. A few doors down from me are the Garza twins, Jeremy and Jameson, who made up their own language when they were toddlers. And when those two are together, no one can understand a word they say, because they say things like, there are a bunch of girls on my street, too, and they're just as bad as the guys. The Marley sisters live across from Rowley's house, and all five of them were born within a few years of each other. I don't know what their deal is, but those girls would just randomly attack people who come into their yard. Like if the postman walks in, get him, girls! Amelia Greenwall lives a few doors down from the Marley sisters. Amelia always dresses like a princess, and I think she's seen too many Disney movies. She stands there with her magic wand and her tiara and says, follow your dreams. Latresa Hooks lives in the bungalow across from the duplex, and she's a 6'2" high school junior. Roderick won't go anywhere near Latresa because she used to bully him when he was my age. Latresa, shove. Latresa's sister Victoria is in love with Ernesto Gutierrez for some reason, and Victoria's best friend, Evelyn Trimble, dresses like a vampire. In fact, I'm pretty sure Evelyn thinks she is a vampire, which is one reason I'm glad I don't take the bus anymore. Because she'd sit behind us and go, I haven't even mentioned half the kids who live on my hill, but if I went down the whole list, it'd take forever. Mom always asks me why I'm not friends with any of the kids at the bottom of the hill, even though I've told her a million times why that'll never happen. Surrey Street is divided into two halves. There's Upper Surrey Street, which is the hill, and Lower Surrey Street, which is the flat part at the bottom. And even though we all live on the same street, the hill kids and the non-hill kids can't stand one another. Living on the hill is no fun. First of all, it's really far from the school, and that last stretch at the end of the day is no joke, especially when it's hot like it has been lately. Because when you walk up, you go, trudge, 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 sweat, sweat, sweat. The worst thing about living on a hill is that there's not a lot you can do on it. And if you want to play with a ball, you can forget about it. But the kids who live at the bottom of the hill have it made. Their part of the street is flat, so they can do anything they want down there. That's why all the athletes come from Lower Surrey Street. The thing is, the kids who live at the bottom of our street think they own it. And if any of us hill people come down there to play, the lower Surrey Street kids won't let us. They throw baseballs and stuff at us if we get anywhere near there. In fact, the reason it took me 4 years to learn to ride a bike was because I had to do it in 5-second spurts. But when it snows, the tables are turned. All of a sudden, the lower Surrey Street kids want to use our hill for sledging. But that's when we give those guys a taste of their own medicine. Because if they get anywhere near us, it snowballs everywhere. Most of the time, we can keep the lower Surrey Street kids off the hill, but they're sneaky, and sometimes they slip past us, like hiding behind a slow-moving mail truck. Last winter, a bunch of the lower Surrey Street kids bought the same winter gear as the hill kids, and it was weeks before any of us caught on, because they looked like us, until we figured it out.
Hey.
If you live on Surrey Street, you're either a hill kid or a non-hill kid, and there's no switching sides. There's a kid named Trevor Nix who lived in the hill until last summer, which is when his family moved to a bigger house at the bottom of the street. But the kids down there still consider Trevor a hill person, so they won't let him play on the street. Us hill kids think of him as a traitor for moving, and we won't let him sledge in the winter. So now, Trevor is basically stuck indoors year-round. There's a lot of bad blood between the upper Surrey Street kids and the lower Surrey Street kids, which is why we can't be friends. But whenever I try to explain the situation to Mom, she just doesn't get it. In fact, none of the moms on our street do. They're all friends with each other, and they have no clue about what's really going on. They just chat to each other, chat, 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 and we glower at each other, glower, glower, glower. Lately, though, things have been pretty calm on our street. Us hill kids keep to our side, and the other guys keep to theirs. But if someone does something stupid, this whole place is gonna blow. Sunday. The temperature dropped about 10 degrees over the weekend, so today my family was out looking for our pet pig, because he was lost. For the Christmas holidays, my family went away and we left the pig in a kennel. But I guess the pig thought it should have come with us, and it wasn't too happy about being left behind. When we got back home, the pig let us know how it felt about not being included on our family holiday. After a few days of the pig acting out, Dad decided enough was enough, and he sent it to obedience school. But the next morning, we got a call from the lady who runs the place, and she said our pig escaped. We've been putting up signs asking for help finding our lost pig ever since. But that thing is smart, so I don't think it's lost. It just doesn't want to be found. I figure the pig is probably off hibernating somewhere. Mom says pigs don't do that. But if you ask me, I think they should. If I was an animal, that's exactly what I'd be doing right now. On the last day of autumn, I think everyone should get into their pajamas and check out until the spring. I'd walk into the living room in my pajamas and say, "See you guys in May." When I was younger, I actually tried to hibernate, but it didn't work. I used to get super excited for Christmas, and once December rolled around, it was really hard for me to wait until the big day. So, one year on December 1st, I told my parents I was going to go to sleep and that they shouldn't wake me up until Christmas morning. I was pretty surprised when they didn't put up a fight. I went to bed that night, but I only slept until 1:30 p.m. the next day. Then my sleep schedule was screwed up for the next 2 weeks. Mom says it's impossible for human beings to hibernate, but I'm not 100% convinced that's true. There's this group of wild kids who live in the woods, and everyone calls them the Mingos. You never see the Mingos in the winter, and when they make their first appearance in the spring, they look like they just woke up. So, if they're not hibernating, I don't know what they're doing all winter. The rest of us normal people have to grind it out and deal with the cold weather. And the only way to do that is to stay inside as much as possible and keep warm. When we got back from our trip a few weeks ago, there was a package on our front step. It was a Christmas gift from Aunt Dorothy, and when we opened it, there was a giant blanket inside. That thing was amazing. It was really soft, but it was also heavy, which is exactly how I like my blankets. The only problem was that the gift was for all three of us boys, and we started fighting over it right away.
Give me the blanket.
No!
I want the blanket.
We wanted to use the blanket at the same time, so Mom told us we were gonna have to take turns with it. But the three of us have never been any good at sharing, so Mom had to make a blanket schedule that spelled out who got to use it when. It said, blanket schedule. 6 p.m., Manny. 6:30 p.m., Greg. 7 p.m., Roderick. Etc., etc. But that wasn't really fair. Manny has his own blanket, so he was being greedy. When it was my turn to use the blanket, I tried to make the most of it. But it was really hard to enjoy myself because Roderick would start hovering over me when I still had 15 minutes left on my shift. We each got 3 half-hour shifts a night, but Roderick would cheat Manny out of his turn by taking the blanket into the bathroom right before Manny's shift was supposed to start. Then Roderick would sit in there for an hour, which cut into my shift. So I'd pound on the bathroom door, and there he would be sitting on the toilet, wrapped in the blanket. So, Mom made a rule that we can't take the blanket into the bathroom. One night, I slept with the blanket in my room, and Roderick complained because he wanted to use it while he ate breakfast. Mom made a new rule that said if you slept with the blanket, it had to be returned downstairs by 8 a.m. By the end of the first week, there were so many rules that Mom had to put them all in a manual, which ended up being something like 25 pages long. It was called Blanket User's Manual. But that didn't solve our problems, and eventually Mom took the blanket away to give it to someone who deserved it. She said it was our fault we couldn't have something nice because we didn't know how to share. But it just sounded like, grown-ups are always talking about how great sharing is. But personally, I think it's overrated. And if I ever get enough money, I'm going to build a big castle all for myself, and there's going to be a big, heavy blanket in every room. Monday. When I woke up this morning, it was below freezing outside. I was relieved it actually felt like winter again. But when Mom told me I had to wear thermal underwear to school, I thought maybe global warming isn't such a bad thing after all. I hate wearing thermal underwear because it's uncomfortable and I feel ridiculous. ridiculous wearing it. Thermal underwear looks cool when it's on the mannequin at the mall. But when I put it on, I just look like a retired superhero. The mannequins at the mall are always super buff, and they make guys like me who can't spend 3 hours in the gym every day look bad. If I ever get in really good shape, I'm going to sign up to be a mannequin model. Because that would be an awesome thing to brag about on a date. Like, we'd be standing there, and there'd be this amazing-looking mannequin, and I'd say, "Hey, recognize that body?" The mannequins you see at the sports store are always in athletic poses, and it looks like it would be hard to stay in that position while someone sculpts you. And that's just too much effort for a job that should be easy. Imagine staying still while holding a discus all day.
Hold still.
So when I apply for the job, I'm going to do it at the bed store. Mom says I'm lucky to have thermal underwear because our ancestors didn't have this kind of stuff to keep them warm. Sometimes I wonder about my ancestors, though. I have no idea why they chose to live here when they could have picked somewhere a whole lot warmer.
This looks good to me.
But I can't complain, because they survived, and everything they did led directly to me. I just wish they could see how I turned out, so they'd all know their sacrifices were worth it. I guess we're all lucky to be here because human beings have had to go through a lot to get to where we are now. At school, we learned that 10,000 years ago, a big sheet of ice covered half the planet. And if people made it through that, I guess we can get through anything. My teacher said that one day the Earth is going to be in another ice age and the glaciers will come back. But I hope it doesn't happen anytime soon. I've heard glaciers move slowly, which is a good thing, because maybe we'll have a chance to do something about it. As the glacier moves forward, we'll try and stop it from consuming our house with air dryers. I don't know which is worse, a planet that's too hot or one that's too cold. All I know is that today it was cold and it wasn't fun walking to school in the morning. I tried to cheer myself up by thinking of things I like about the winter, but I came up with a really short list. Christmas is great and all, but after that, it's just a long slog to the spring. I've decided the only thing that actually makes winter worth it is the hot chocolate. I used to be on the safety patrols, and I'd get free hot chocolate at school, but after I got kicked off, I had to start bringing my own. Lately, I've been filling a thermos with hot chocolate every morning, and that keeps me warm on the walk to school. But today, Dad must have grabbed my thermos and left me with his. And I didn't realize what happened until I took a giant gulp of cream of mushroom soup. I wish Mom and Dad would drive me to school in the morning, but they leave a half hour before I do. There are some kids on my hill whose parents drive them in on cold days like today. But when me and Rowley try to flag them down to hitch a ride, they won't even make eye contact. And that really stinks because us hill kids are supposed to have each other's backs.
Hey, hey. Hey.
It was so cold out today that the teachers decided to keep us indoors for recess, which was perfectly fine with me. The last time we had outdoor recess on a day like today, Albert Sandy was saying it was so cold that your spit would freeze before it hit the ground. Well, it turns out he was wrong, and recess that day was a total nightmare. Ah, the spit didn't freeze at all. Usually, indoor recess isn't much fun. We're supposed to play board games and do arts and crafts, but kids always get restless and find ways to liven things up. So today, our teacher said, we're going to try something new. She taught us how to play a game called Museum, where everyone has to freeze like a statue and hold still for as long as possible. It was actually pretty fun, but when recess ended, I realized it was just an easy way to get us to behave for half an hour. So there we were, all standing motionless, while our teacher was outside sipping a drink and looking at her phone. The thing I don't like about being indoors at school in the winter is that a lot of kids are sick, and I really don't want someone getting me sick. Our school is full of germs, and nobody covers their mouth when they cough or sneeze. Walking down the hallway between classes is like walking through a war zone. Nobody remembers to sneeze into the crook of their arm, and kids like Albert Sandy aren't helping things. Today at lunch, Albert told a story about a guy who covered his sneeze, and when he did, he blew his head clean off. I told Albert his story wasn't true, but he swore it was. He said the guy actually survived, and now he works as a grocery store bagger at the local supermarket. Without head. Albert's always spreading bad information like that, and the kids at my table believe every word he says. So now, there's zero chance any of these guys will cover their mouths the next time they have to sneeze. A couple of weeks ago, Albert said that when someone's pet dies in the winter, they have to wait until the ground thaws in the spring before it can be buried. He said they need somewhere to keep their pets in the meantime. Albert said the people in our town use the school cafeteria's walk-in freezer to store their pets for the winter, and that right now it's full to capacity. I'm almost positive that this is just another one of Albert's stupid made-up stories, but until we find our pig, I'm not gonna order the pork barbecue special, just in case. I'm seriously thinking of changing lunch tables because I'm tired of sitting with Albert, Sandy, and all these other idiots every day. One kid I won't miss is Teddy Silvetti, who wears the same sweater all winter long. Teddy's sweater has never been cleaned, and there are food stains all over it. Sometimes the kids at my table try to guess what each stain is, which is what they were doing today. See, this is the reason girls at my school have pictures of pop singers in their lockers. The guys in my grade just aren't giving them any good options. I can't even imagine how many germs are on Teddy's sweater, which is why I sit at least 2 seats away from him. Most of my brain power at school goes on keeping tabs on whose germs are where, and I've already filled up 2 notebooks this winter. 10:03 a.m. Justin T. sneezed on hand and touched button on water fountain. 10:21 a.m. Shelby M. coughed on pencil sharpener. 10:23 a.m. Dylan L. didn't wash hands after using the bathroom. The times it gets tricky is when you have twins like Jeremy and Jameson Garza. I can't tell them apart, and today it looked to me like one was sick, but the other one wasn't. So they were standing at a table, and one of them would go, cough, 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 and the other one didn't. But which one was which? So I shot a spitball in the sick one's hair to make it easier to keep track of him. The only good thing about being ill is the cherry lozenges Mom gives me when I have a sore throat. I know you're supposed to suck on them real slow, but I chew those things like candy, and I go through a few packs a day. The girls in my grade love the smell of cherry lozenges, which almost makes being ill worth it. Unfortunately, the guys in my grade like the smell too, and they're always trying to get me to give them some. A few weeks ago, I thought I felt a sore throat coming on, and I brought 3 packs of cherry lozenges to school with me. I kept 1 pack in my pocket and the other 2 in my locker. But Jake McGough sniffed out the packs I was keeping in my locker, and by the time I found out, Speed Bump had already picked the lock.
Huh?
I wish I didn't have to go to school at all during cold and flu season. Maybe one day I'll buy one of those big plastic bubbles so I'm not exposed to other kids' germs. But I'm sure my bubble wouldn't last a day before some jerk popped it. Even though I hate being ill, I'm kind of glad they haven't come up with a cure for the cold yet. Because if they did, I wouldn't be able to fake being ill and stay home from school to play video games.
I'm not feeling so good.
Yeah, right.
Today, it was even colder on the walk home than it was on the walk to school, and this time, me and Rowley were facing the wind, which made it 10 times worse. It was so bad that we had to make a few pit stops on the way home. The first place we ducked into was the pizza shop, because there's a big oven in there, so it's always warm inside. But when the guy who owns the place realized we weren't going to buy anything, he kicked us out.
Hey, you kids, get out of here.
Our next stop was the town library. That's a public building, and I knew they couldn't tell us to leave. But when the librarians started getting pushy with the books, we left on our own.
Would you like to read this?
I wish we'd used the bathroom in the library before we headed back outside, though, because when we got halfway home, Rowley really needed to go. We knocked on a few doors, but when people saw us, they pretended they weren't home. We finally got someone to answer, but by that point, Rowley's face was so frozen, he couldn't even form words. By the time we got to Surrey Street, I thought Rowley was going to have a medical emergency. But I knew none of the lower Surrey Street people were going to let us inside their houses. There's a big rock in Mr. Yee's front yard, and I told Rowley he should duck behind it to do his business. Personally, I wouldn't pee outside in this kind of cold, because Albert Sandy told us a story about what happened to a guy who did. But I didn't feel like it was the right time to mention that to Rowley, and I'm not really sure he had to do a number one anyway. Whatever he was doing back there, he was taking forever. Some of the lower Surrey Street kids came out of their houses to play, and before long, Rowley had drawn a crowd. I just backed off because I really didn't want people to know I was with him. Thankfully, Rowley wrapped things up, and we got out of there before anyone realized what he was doing, because this is just the sort of stupid thing that could end up sparking a war. Tuesday. It was seriously cold again this morning, so I dug my scarf and a pair of old gloves out of the wardrobe. Mom said I should wear the mittens Grandma knitted for me last winter, but when she made those things, she forgot to add thumbs. I think she was watching daytime TV or something when she made them. So whenever I put them on, it's basically like wearing